Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are going to be talking about the ongoing horror that is the family separation and mess at the southern border. We're also going to talk about Pelosi and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And there's a lot of interesting bullshit that's going on there. And that's the nicest thing I can say about it.
Bullshit.
Yes, that's the nicest thing I can say about it. So, big show today, and it is fucking freezing in my office. Just as LA is getting cold for the first time, I don't know, ever, the heat in my house is like, fuck you! And so it's literally 56 degrees in my house right now. I'm wearing a puffy coat. And I realize that people who live on the East Coast are like saying, oh, poor baby, that's ridiculous. But like, I cannot fucking deal with it. I live in the desert for a reason.
Yeah, well, Northern California is on fire, but simultaneously it's right. Freezing in my apartment because right. I don't know.
Why not?
I don't know. So I'm wearing sweatpants and two layers of socks. And I know, I used to live on the East Coast. I know, like East Coast is like, Farsha, it's 60 degrees. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Everything. All right, Varsha. So we've talked about this before, but there has been some fuckery with the sponsorship of migrant kids and what's going on with ICE there. So now, from what I understand, ICE has actually arrested immigrants who've tried to sponsor migrant kids. So can you kind of take us through what's going on and what Democrats are doing in response?
Yeah. So Senators Kamala Harris and Ron Wyden have introduced legislation that would literally block ICE from using information gathered in the process of resettling unaccompanied minors, which is under HHS, and then enforcing actions against individuals who are trying to sponsor these kids. So Literally, what Democrats have found is that ICE is sharing information with HHS, or HHS is sharing information, and they are arresting people who are willing to sponsor kids. And again, There could be like the small possibility or a pretty large possibility that the people they're arresting are undocumented, but it's still fucked up. It's still really...
Oh, I feel like we talk about that a lot too. Like, just because something is legal doesn't make it right, and just because something is illegal doesn't make it wrong, because laws are pretty subjective. I'm not talking about anarchy here. I'm just talking about like laws in this country were designed specifically to be almost living and breathing and to change. And that's why we have a Congress. That's why we introduce new legislation and repeal old. And what was legal in the 1800s might not be legal now, and vice versa. We've seen that with something little like slavery. So, you know, just because there's legality here. And the other thing here is, I think this really goes back to, we talked a lot about lack of process and how HHS basically took this very delicate, very important project and fucked it up beyond all reason. I'm talking, they're attaching Microsoft Word documents to emails level of fucking it up, which if Varsha ever attached a Word document to an email, I would probably fire her. So... Sorry, Varsha. Didn't mean to throw you under the bus there.
Word documents, the formatting doesn't hold. And if you're doing important stuff like, you know, running a podcast or, you know, reuniting children with their fucking families, you probably should have a better process than Word documents that can be corrupted in an email. I'm just saying.
Exactly.
I'm not a cyber expert.
Just a thought, though. But so we talk about this lack of process, but then we talk about this very efficient process of HHS sharing information with ICE so that they can arrest illegal immigrants, which kind of makes this idea that lack of process has been the biggest hurdle complete and utter bullshit.
Exactly. I mean, it's clear that they have the process when they want to have the process, when they want to arrest people and deport them and make it seem as if they are hurting black and brown people every single day. They can do it. But when they want to reunite kids with their families, no. We lost the documents. We don't know where these kids are. It's unacceptable. And so like Senator Harris said, you know, unaccompanied children are being held in detention facilities or living in tent cities due in part to the potential sponsor's fear of retribution from ICE coming forward. And she's literally pointing out the flaw in their plan, or the benefit in their plan, which is they can't reunite these kids because ICE is threatening any sponsors that come forward. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, I mean, they're breaking the law if they're undocumented. Again, we've talked about it. This is not like they shouldn't be a priority. There's a certain types of undocumented immigrants that should be priorities if they're violent criminals. But again, they're most likely not, because study after study after study has shown that when you live in an immigrant community, you are less likely to experience violent crime than you are if you're living in a predominantly American community. So this notion that undocumented immigrants are one, criminals, or two, they should be a these people who are coming forward as sponsors to take care of children should be a priority for us to deport is bullshit. And on top of that, if you have like a cold heart and no fucking soul, on top of that, just letting you know, most undocumented immigrants pay taxes. You're paying sales taxes. You're paying other types of taxes. You are paying taxes if you're undocumented or unauthorized, right? So if you have a cold soul, at least think about the fact that they are contributing to the U.S. economy. So deporting them right now, if one, they want to sponsor kids, and two, if they're still contributing to the U.S. economy and they're not criminals, is fucking insane.
Right. It does not make any sense. And again, this goes back to the othering and the these people of it, right? They're saying these people do not meet our standards to be sponsors. And again, this goes back to the Trump administration has tried to frame this as, oh, we're upping standards for the vetting process so that kids don't go to dangerous homes, or they love to bring up this child trafficking, which is a problem. And I'm not trying to minimize the impact of trafficking children, and that does happen. Mm-hmm. But again, framing it that way removes context from what they're really doing here. Because what they're saying is that we are trying to help these kids, but X, Y, and Z, right? Like, we're attaching Word documents to emails, and undocumented immigrants are the ones coming forward, and somehow placing the onus back on the people most deeply affected by this.
Exactly.
You know, and this isn't even reuniting these kids with their parents. These are reuniting kids with sponsors who are trying to help them. I mean, this is ridiculous. And we've also talked about stories in which parents who come forward to be reunited with their children are then, you know, harassed by the government and told that they can't have their kids back and you know, criminalized in that way as well. So there's no policy outcome here. There's no end game, if I can call it that, for the Trump administration. What they're doing is creating an impossible paradigm for these kids, because their only goal is to vilify immigrants.
Yeah.
And they don't have any sort of solid policy like goals in mind.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about it, but Kirstjen Nielsen is leaving DHS, right? And
right.
The thing is, she is a goddamn liar, right? So multiple times when she was asked in 2017 and 2018, or actually in 2018, if it was a policy of DHS to separate families, she said no. She lied in front of the House. And so now that we have the House again, DHS is something that should be fucking investigated, as should ICE, because it's clear that not only do they not have a process, they purposefully orchestrated this policy when they knew it would be unduly cruel to kids. For no fucking reason.
And I really think, again, this goes back to what feels like the central thesis of Hellbent these days, is that this administration is quite effectively othering people. I mean, mm-hmm. during the midterms, you know, all Trump talked about was this caravan, this slow-moving humanitarian crisis. And he deployed troops to the border, which Look, I've talked to a couple lawyers about this, and I'm still not 100% that he's even allowed to do that. But regardless of my conspiracy theories, you know, he sent troops to the border to deal with this problem. That's not a problem. And these troops are going to miss holidays with their families because of it. And then to turn around and say that it's because of some wanted policy outcome when they obviously don't have one is not just disingenuous, but actually really more to the point, their actual long-term goal,
yeah,
which is to vilify certain groups of people, because they know you know, it's kind of like authoritarian rule 101. You divide and conquer. You say you other people, and you give certain people power. I mean, it's the fucking prison experiment on a large scale, which actually just turned my stomach as I said it.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a mess. And I'm pretty sure that you know, this story, I mean, I hope beyond hope that this legislation is at least a call to action, if not the ultimate legislative outcome of what's going on here.
Okay, Devin, what's been going on with sexism in DC? Still big.
Wait, aren't we in a post-sexism society? Just like we're in a post-racial society?
Apparently.
Oh, that's not a thing. Okay, cool. So as long as we're all on the same page, that's not a thing. So a reporter, I don't know who this guy is, but let's say he's some sort of disgusting reporter, tweeted out this picture of the back of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she's wearing a jacket and a skirt, kind of like a skirt suit. And he said, quote, "Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they just took now. I'll tell you something. That jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles." So terrible grammar aside, what he's saying is that Ocasio-Cortez doesn't look like she is, quote unquote, struggling, that she's not the working class leader that she claims to be, that she's not having problems finding, you know, finding a way to move to DC, mm-hmm. and basically trying to puncture the, I'm not even going to call it like image that she has, but just kind of, you know, blatantly throw in people's faces like, oh, well, if you're wearing this skirt suit, it somehow makes you rich. I'm not totally sure what he's
going
for.
This is like, this is why, when we're going to talk about Pelosi later, but this is why you don't let Republicans shift the narrative on what women, Democratic women, should look like or should be or who they are. This is why Democrats should fucking like reclaim the fucking narrative on who Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is. This is why people should just listen to AOC when she says she's having trouble moving to DC, when she says she's working class, when she says this is a fucking gift my mom gave me, or whatever the explanation is. Because it's probably, I'm just gonna like be honest, it's probably a jacket from like Nordstrom Rack. You can, like, I have bought a lot of jackets and suits and stuff from Nordstrom and Ross and shit. I don't have to spend more than $100. It's pretty cheap.
Also, TJ Maxx and I are on, like, we have a very deep, like, deep and loving.
Yeah, the point of the post isn't about how, like, I can explain away the coat and stuff, because it shouldn't fucking matter what she wears. The point is that people are saying, oh, because she's a Democratic socialist, how dare she own clothes? It's like the joke is, like, oh, you're a socialist? What do you mean you own money? Like, what? It makes no sense. Right. And this is how, because this, like, this person works for the Washington Examiner, I think, this is how they're shifting the narrative as to what it means to be a socialist, and it's bullshit. Again, I'm not a socialist. I am a Democrat, but it's okay to be a champion of the working class and own a fucking jacket.
Well, yeah, and I think this also goes back to something kind of, there are two things at play here. Actually, there are many, many things at play, but I'm going to kind of tackle two of them. And one of them is undermining what women say, mm-hmm. right? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying something about who she is.
Yeah.
And then undercutting that is just a way to discredit her, and just a way to make the public turn against her, which, again, that's what the Republicans are trying to do. And so believing women is definitely part of this. And the deep sexism that takes root there is very obvious. And then the second one, I think, was put perfectly by @thejournalista on Twitter. She said, quote, "You don't look poor" is coded language for poor people don't deserve anything good because they're poor.
Yeah.
And I think that's also going on here, this very classist idea that being poor looks a certain way. And if you don't look a certain way, then you are somehow lying about who you are. So it's very connected with this sexist idea.
Yeah, it's like that Fox News bit that was like a couple years ago or something, where they were talking about poor people and how they owned fridges. And they're like, why do poor people need refrigerators? I'm like, I don't know, to fucking keep their food cold? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And then they got all angry when like poor people were like buying meat with their food stamps. Like, it's disgusting.
Right.
So yeah, it's two levels here. It's classist bullshit and it's sexist bullshit. And it's creepy as fuck, because there are Hill staffers taking pictures of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that she can't see. That's creepy. that is creepy as fuck. And then this guy, Eddie Scari, is like just posting it on Twitter. And then he deleted it after he got a ratio. For you non-Twitter folks, a ratio is when within an hour he got like 20,000 replies telling him he was creepy as fuck and an asshole. And finally he was like, I deleted a tweet because it made me look bad, but he didn't actually apologize. And then AOC like had a screenshot of it and she was like, oh, no, you can't delete your misogyny without an apology.
I to take it to this like creepy as fuck point too, this reminds, so there's two things, like you said about food stamps. I remember reading this article, and I wish I remember where it was from, but it was this woman who was talking about a time in her life where she was on food stamps, and she was in the grocery store and she bought a birthday cake for her son. And the woman in line at the grocery store behind her saw her using food stamps to get a cake for her son's birthday and started berating her in public about buying a birthday cake for her child. And so, yeah, there's this idea that poor people aren't allowed to buy birthday cakes or own a jacket or try to look nice at their new job. And then there's also this narrative where how can you get a good job when you dress like a poor person? And that's another kind of layer to this, yeah, when you talk about like clothing and signaling, where, you know, a lot of people, when they go in for job interviews, like they'll get comments like, I can't believe she's wearing a t-shirt under her jacket, yeah, right? Like, I would have worn a simple, like, you know, cashmere shell. And it's like, well, I'm sure she would have too, you asshole, you know? And so it doesn't even cut both ways. It's like, you can't have nice things, but if you don't have nice things, then you won't look the part, right? If AOC were wearing something else, then like, she even tweeted, she was like, I could be wearing a burlap sack and you would take a picture of me from behind and be able to criticize me for that.
For not being up to the job and or something, or not taking the office seriously.
Exactly.
Like, it's like women, exactly, cannot win. And that's what's so fucked up about this, is that she could have like scrimped and saved for months to get this jacket and coat for her first day in Congress, because, you know, she won the primary a while ago. And now, instead of being taken seriously for being willing to dress the part and being willing to be an amazing advocate for her district, she's being treated as if she doesn't actually support the agenda she supports. She is fucking working class. Even if she fucking wasn't, she supports working class policies.
Well, and again, I want to take a quick turn here and say, well, you know, Bernie Sanders touts himself as a champion of the working class and talks a lot about, you know, free college, free healthcare, things that are great and that will benefit the working class. And he is not working class. Yeah. He's not. And so, but people accept that on its face, and that's fine. But this is somehow not fine. And I just want to quickly go back to what you said about this being creepy as fuck and taking pictures of women when they don't know it. This reminds me very strongly of Reddit, the armpit of the internet. There used to be a subreddit called Upshots.
Ugh.
And it was literally where people would post pictures that they took with their cell phones up women's skirts without them knowing. And this is very much in line with that. This idea that women's bodies are somehow public property or open for public consumption, and that just by being in public and having a physical body, that is somehow okay to then photograph and critique and pick apart. I mean, Hillary Clinton dealt with this. Nancy Pelosi dealt. I mean, all women in politics deal with this. Maxine Waters deals with this probably more than most. And this idea, again, the sort of intersection between what you're supposed to look like, what people want you to look like, and the idea that women and women's bodies are somehow acceptable for, you know, public consumption, all comes together in this one disgusting moment that just really encapsulates a lot of what we're fighting for.
I mean, here, another point where she wasn't believed, AOC, right? So she tweeted out that people keep directing her to the intern and spouse events instead of the congressperson events. And she had like a face palm emoji. And some dude, some journalist or some asshole was like, oh, wait, I checked with them. There are no intern events today. She's like, yeah, they fucking are. Maybe next time you could fucking believe me when I say there are intern and spouse events they're directing me to. Like,
right. Why wouldn't there be? Of course there are. It's orientation. Like, what the fuck? There's fucking events for everyone.
It's so frustrating. And it's not just happening to her. Like, the other amazing people of color who have been elected, women of color who have been elected, have been saying this too. But no, you don't believe her. Like, it's annoying and it's disgusting and it's sexist bullshit. But yeah, so when it comes to this picture and this tweet that has been deleted but will never be forgotten because it got the meme treatment. There were so many pictures.
The internet is forever, people.
And there are so many like other pictures of random people in coats being like, that I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles. And it's a picture of like Joseph and the magnificent coat. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're gonna say something like that and then delete and then be spineless enough to delete it. Again, I've said this before. If you're gonna be a shitty person, be the best fucking shitty person you can be and stand by it, you asshole. Yeah. Seriously, I believe that. And it just the whole thing is creepy and disgusting. And it also reminds me of when I was pregnant and people would reach out and just touch my stomach.
Why?
Like, you know, my stomach. Yeah, apparently when you're pregnant, people are allowed to do that. So what I started doing in response to anyone who did that, whether I knew them or not, when they put their hand on my stomach, I would reach over and put my hand on their stomach.
Oh my God, Devin.
And they would be like, I know. They'd be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I thought that's what we're doing now. And they're like, that's not okay. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's not okay. But it's just
iconic.
But like this idea that women's bodies are somehow up for this sort of
public humiliation
discourse.
Or whatever.
Public humiliation. Yeah. Or whatever this was trying to be, whatever discrediting this guy was trying to do, is on its face bald sexism. Yeah. And then like, let's just throw in some more intersections here. She's a woman of color. She's young.
She's working class.
You know, all of these, she's working class. There's class, just all of it together. And you're like, I'm sorry, are you trying to make a case study for, you know, the women's studies classes for the next generation of college students? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Yeah. I mean, so that's that sexism. I also want to talk about the sexism directed at Nancy Pelosi.
I'm just going to start this off by saying, fuck you, Tim Ryan of Ohio, and fuck you, Seth Moulton of Massachusetts. I fucking hate you.
They're the absolute fucking worst, and I am so fucking angry. I'm so fucking angry.
So basically, a bunch of Democrats, not the left-wing Democrats, no, not the progressive Democrats, a bunch of center-right Democrats are challenging Nancy Pelosi for speaker, okay? And by a bunch, I mean 17, which means 93% of the rest of the caucus is like, fuck yeah, we want Nancy Pelosi. So these 17 people have like signed a letter, and most of them, you guessed it, are white dudes. And
well, isn't the hashtag five white men? You're giving away the game here. Like, you're making it very easy to see what this is about, which like makes my job easier. Thank you, appreciate it, Seth fucking Moulton.
I would understand if it was the progressive caucus who wanted to punch left and or not punch left, but push left and maybe elect Barbara Lee as speaker. I'm not biased. I mean, I know I live in the California 13th and I fucking love Barbara Lee. But yeah, if Barbara Lee were to become speaker, fine. But they're pushing for someone who's to the right of Nancy Pelosi. It's fucking insane.
Right.
Also, on top of it, Nancy Pelosi has been vilified for almost a decade now, actually more than almost a decade, for decades now by the Republicans, and still no Democrat lost a fucking seat in 2018, right? We gained fucking like 38 or 37 seats. We gained seats, right, even though every single Republican, every single House district is running Nancy Pelosi ads. We still gained seats. And again, I'm not saying you give Nancy Pelosi all the credit for that, but still, we gained seats. So this idea that vilifying Nancy Pelosi is going to make you lose in 2020 is bullshit. And so on top of that,
it's bullshit.
The job of the speaker, just for all you people out there who don't know what the job of the speaker is, the job of the speaker is to get together the votes for the bills, get shit done, and fundraise a lot for Democrats and get them reelected. The job of the speaker is not to be the public face of the party. You know why? Because even if Nancy Pelosi goes away and is not speaker anymore, they're still going to run ads against her because she's a San Francisco liberal. That's what they do.
Yeah. Who gets shit done. Even if she's not speaker, you think she's going to like sit down and like get manicures or I don't know, whatever people think that women do with their free time, which no. Are you fucking – she's Nancy fucking Pelosi. If you think she's going to go quietly into the night, you have no idea what's going on here.
Marsha Fudge is on this list of 17 Democrats, right? And Marsha Fudge is She's a congresswoman. She's a six-term congresswoman from Cleveland. She's in the Congressional Black Caucus. I think she's the former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, right? And basically, she told the Washington Post and on Twitter that she's like considering running, but she still hasn't decided if she wants to run and challenge Pelosi for speaker. But the real issue for me is that Tim Ryan and Seth Moulton were hiding behind Marsha Fudge, because a lot of people were like, wait, why the right. fuck do you want to unseat a woman after the year of the fucking woman 2.0, right? And Moulton is like, Congress needs a new leader, period. I'm hoping Marsha Fudge, my first and arguably best mentor in Congress, will run for Speaker of the House. First of all, when you tweeted this yesterday or 2 days ago, Fudge had said she didn't actually want to run. And now she still hasn't said she definitely wants to run.
Well, I think this goes back to this idea of not that woman. Like, I don't mind a woman being in charge, just not that one. I want this one over here. And then you bring her up, and then it's like, oh, no, I don't want that exactly. one either, actually. Let's go with this one. And it's this, like, daisy chain that goes all the way around until Seth Moulton's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. I'll be speaker. Like, if you don't think he has aspirations to that, then, again, you don't know what's going on. And I think that's just so key to this. And then, so Cecile Richards, the former president of Planned Parenthood, has a great Twitter thread, and I'm going to read the whole thing, so stick with me here because it's very important. She says, quote, I find it interesting that there are four leaders in Congress, only one is a woman, and she is the only person who folks are going after. And that the House Democrats just picked up at least 34 seats, this was yesterday, the most in a generation, she just helped make them committee chairs. I also find it interesting, though not surprising, that the effort to go after her is being led by four men in Congress. When I worked for Nancy Pelosi, she had just become Democratic whip, the first woman of either party to hold that rank. She whipped the caucus to vote against the war in Iraq, even after Democratic leadership Dick Gephardt stood with President Bush in support of the war. She was the Speaker of the House when we passed the Affordable Care Act. As Barack Obama has said himself, we would not have the ACA without her. I will never forget the meeting with her when I was at Planned Parenthood, where she told me in the middle of that fight that she would not pass the ACA if it banned insurance coverage for abortion. Though many, quote, progressive men were willing to throw women under the bus,
one of those men, Tim Ryan.
This is about Nancy Pelosi, but it's more about this, not that woman. And white men, even progressive, democratic, nice ally white men, are fucking terrified. Terrified. Of losing their grip on power, because they saw who was elected in the Democratic Party. You know who it was? It was women and people of color and women of color. And they're like, oh, shit, my time might be up here. And they are so scared. They are so scared. This has so much to do with white supremacy and the way the power structure is molded in this country. And I mean, what I said on Twitter was, there's a reason men aren't trusted as allies. When the chips are down, they'll martyr you for their gain. And when the chips start coming back, they'll tell you you've always been incompetent. And that's the problem. That's why I don't trust male allies, is because they are so scared that they're willing to take one of the most effective leaders of our generation and vilify her, make her one of those people, make her not that woman. For their
literally
own
gain. Also, they're literally cowering to the Republican message that Nancy Pelosi is too toxic for them to win in 2020. That is their fucking message. Apparently, yeah. Like earlier today, Marsha Fudge or somebody, I think it was Tim Ryan or someone, they were like, we didn't actually win as many seats as we wanted to. No, bullshit. You won more seats than were expected.
More.
There were so few pollsters who were willing to say that you could take Katie Porter. Katie Porter won in Orange County. All of Orange County is now represented by Democrats. I'm not saying that's because of Nancy Pelosi, but that definitely isn't because the ads against Nancy Pelosi were so toxic. Like, so, and also, I just want to say Pelosi is a badass here, and she knows that it's better for her to run against a specific challenger than to run against this ether of her being too old or something. So literally, she was right. Like, come in, the water's warm. She's a fucking badass. And also, I mentioned Barbara Lee earlier. Barbara Lee is running for Senate, for Democratic caucus chair, and she's going to be badass at it. And so I called Barbara Lee's office, and I was like, fuck yeah, I just found out you're running for caucus chair. I hope you win. Also, don't let Seth Moulton and Tim Ryan choose the speaker, because that is some bullshit. I said those exact words. The intern really appreciated it.
Here it is. That's the game here. That's the game that we're playing. And yeah, you're right. Turning the OC blue wasn't necessarily Nancy Pelosi specifically, but I mean, to say that she didn't have a hand in it is just
she's an amazing fundraiser.
It's just being intentionally obtuse, and it's annoying. And the other thing, and you kind of pointed to it a little bit, is this ageism here. Right. Again, this is another way to say not that woman. Right. It's just more of the same language. But let's just take ageism for a second, because some people who, when kind of painted into a corner, will say, oh, well, she's old and, you know, we need young, new voices. And this is like this latent or baked in sexism, that it's not just, okay, you have to be a woman, but you have to be a young woman. You have to look a certain way. Going back to AOC, you have to look a certain way. You have to act a certain way. And if you don't fit these very specific parameters of the perfect woman, the Ivanka Trump, the exceptional woman, if you don't fit these patriarchal ideas of what a woman should be, then that others you even further. And the fact that our own party is othering people in our own party is honestly just exhausting. It's just fucking exhausting. And again, this like age, and but just for the record, 79-year-old Nancy Pelosi stood in 4-inch heels for 8 hours to effectively filibuster legislation against the Dreamers.
And yeah, I just want to point out that, again, like you made this point so clear, but in previous episodes, but we have to have some long game here. And the long game isn't to put some young, inexperienced person in the position of speaker. Again, you can give new, fresh faces leadership positions. And then in 2020, when we have a female Democratic president, because that's what Nancy Pelosi has said, that like the reason she didn't retire in 2016 is because she was now the only woman left in leadership, right? Mitch McConnell was the Senate leader. What's his face? Schumer is the minority leader. Pence is the vice president. Trump is the president. Like, she's like, I'm the only woman left, right? Paul Ryan. So, like, I'm the only woman left. So she was like, I can't retire yet. That was her position. But she's always said that, yeah, when I fucking retire, I will fucking retire. And she's made it very clear in a lot of interviews, because fucking David fucking Axelrod in an interview last year with her was like, so people are asking you when you're going to retire. And she was like, she snapped back. She's like, you know, people never ask Chuck Schumer when he's going to retire. Nobody asks Mitch McConnell when he's going to retire. Shut the fuck up, right? She didn't say it in those words. I'm coloring here. But and then the other point is, and I really want to emphasize it, the challenge is coming from the right of Pelosi, right? So the progressives online who are saying, oh, we need the speaker and we need like Congress to represent us more. We need more like brave Democratic policies that are really progressive. Totally fine. Fucking go for it. Yeah. But the challenge is coming from the center of the party. It's fucking moronic. It's not, you know, they're not asking Barbara Lee to be speaker because they know Barbara Lee is going to, you know, support the quote unquote identity politics they don't like. Because literally Tim Ryan in the past has said that he hates the fact that Democrats have turned into the party of political correctness. He's like, we can't have these purity tests. This is a quote from him. You know, these are a few characteristics Democrats have to have. You can't be racist, you can't be sexist, you can't be homophobic. You've got to check those boxes and then be economically progressive. Other than that, we've got to be a big tent party, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's what you have to be. Like, that's not being politically correct. That's just our values, right? And so he supports people like anti-choice Democrats and all this shit. And I'm like, no, if you cannot be pro-choice, why the fuck are you a Democrat?
It doesn't make any You know what? No, it does make sense to me. I mean, this makes such perfect sense to me. Nancy Pelosi is the perfect person to vilify. That it's coming from the centrists of our own party. I don't think centrist Democrats are bad. Yeah. I'm not trying to vilify them here. I think we need a broad range. But this idea of like then throwing out these buzzwords like bipartisanship and identity politics, are they just like throwing darts at a board of inane shit to say?
Because
like,
literally Moulton said it's not about ideology. It's much bigger than that. We have to have a vision for the future. We can't become a party that's anti-Trump. We didn't become a party that's anti-Trump. The last midterms just show that we ran on healthcare and taxes. And guess what? That's what Pelosi said. You know, Pelosi, like, she was vilified for saying the tax plan was giving crumbs to the American people. And then it became a really big talking point because everybody understood it as crumbs. They were like, holy shit, we are only getting crumbs, right? But yeah, I'm not saying centrists or whatever are bad. I'm not saying progressives are bad. I'm not saying Nancy Pelosi is bad. I'm saying the people who are challenging Pelosi fundamentally don't understand the job of speaker. And it's such like it's literally like shooting them. They're shooting themselves in the foot. Like, we just won a giant victory and they're going into a circular firing squad.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You don't. No one graduates college and goes to the CEO position unless you have some sort of nepotism ties. Trump. but like, you, that's just not how it works. Speaker of the House is not an entry level position. It's not even a mid management position that you've been working for like 7 or 8 years and you get bumped up to manager. No, that's not what this is. This is a fucking complicated experience required. You need to know more than how to use Microsoft Word. Everyone stop using Microsoft Word. But you need to like figure out fucking why you are so hellbent, pun intended, on kicking out the only fucking person who might be qualified for this. Okay, she's not the only person, but she is
definitely the most qualified, right?
And so, she is the most qualified. I'm going to read something from Wonkette. And, well, you know, Wonkette's kind of satirical and whatever. So we don't usually source from these kind of things, but this just made me laugh. So I'm going to just read it because it made me feel better. It said, quote, "The anti-Pelosi crowd was all set to blame her if Democrats didn't regain the House or if they only barely squeaked to a majority. They curiously didn't whip out the champagne and flowers when neither happened. If you're going to come for Pelosi, you better come correct. The time for a leadership challenge was in 2010, 2014, or 2016 when Democrats lost. Pelosi fearlessly led her party through almost a decade in the minority. She held her caucus together." I mean, I don't understand what's so hard to understand about that.
Remember when a bunch of Democrats were like, oh, maybe we'll compromise with the Republicans on the AHCA or the tax plan or all this shit. She was like, fuck no. And then Chuck Schumer's over here in the Senate being like, oh yeah, I don't care if you vote for a rapist for the Supreme Court, Joe Manchin, go for it.
Oh my God, wait, can we yes, please talk about Chuck Schumer for a minute? By the way, Varsha and I are planning another drunkisode, so you know Chuck Schumer is going to be the drinking word for that one. Okay, Chuck Schumer is an incompetent piece of human garbage. And I know that that's strong language, but you just have to like follow me here for a second. I say that because that's the sort of rhetoric that's being directed at Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi is an effective legislator and a goddamn amazing leader. Chuck Schumer, who was just reconfirmed as House Minority Leader, in spite of the fact of that he's done nothing of note, and we fucking lost seats in the Senate, which, again, not all his fault, but like,
fired
if
someone?
You're gonna fucking yeah, like be like, no, yeah, maybe the head is the good place to start, but no, he sailed right through, and like you said, Joe fucking Manchin fucking voted for Justice Buttface Kavanaugh. And Chuck Schumer let that happen. And I'm sorry, that is his fault, yeah, because it is his job as minority leader to go to Joe Manchin's office and be like, you need to fucking get your life together right now. And you need to understand that this is not going to go well for you if you vote for this asshole, and you are going to stop it right now. Because you know what? That's what Pelosi would have done. And I know, I can guarantee you that no such meeting occurred between Schumer and Manchin. No way. And no, but he's fine. Let's just like reelect him. That's totally fine. Fuck yeah, you.
Nancy
just
Pelosi,
fuck you.
Her job is to do one thing, is to get the caucus in line. Okay. And so it's good that she is on the left of the center of the Democratic caucus, right? She's not crazy progressive, but she is pretty fucking liberal. Again, pretty fucking liberal. Go back to 2006 and read some fucking stories, okay? But I'm not saying centrism is bad, but if you are trying to quote-unquote compromise with a fascist party, you don't actually want to compromise, so you shouldn't be electing somebody from the right wing of the Democratic Party, because they're going to be more willing to be like, oh yeah, let's just fund the military and fund a wall, like whatever, right? Like, there are people on the right wing of the party who are willing to say, oh yeah, we'll get a Dreamers bill and in exchange we'll cut legal immigration, right? You need someone like Nancy Pelosi to be like, no, that's fucking bullshit. No.
So like, go the fuck away.
I'm not saying like immediately individual centrists or conservadems or whatever or individual progressives are bad. I'm saying the job of speaker is to be like, what does the whole caucus want? What do the American people want? And then I will fucking do that. I will whip the votes based on that, right? And for everyone's information, right? Indivisible polled all of their members, and over 90% of them were like, oh yeah, no, we want Nancy Pelosi as speaker, because they realize that the challenge is coming from the right wing of the party. Again, I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying that's where the challenge is coming from. And then so did Move On. And Move On endorsed Bernie Sanders in 2016. And so did a bunch of labor groups. So does Cecile Richards. So does a bunch of fucking women, right? Like Barbara Lee and John Lewis have endorsed Nancy Pelosi for speaker, right? So there are a lot of people who are saying Nancy Pelosi isn't like really listening to the fact that the party is becoming more brown and black. I think she is, because I think she understands what her leadership team should look like. And it should include Barbara Lee and Clyburn. It shouldn't include a bunch of white dudes.
You mean hashtag five white guys? Again, they're giving away the game. Oh my God, it makes my job so much easier. But they're literally just saying, we believe in white supremacy and we think men should be running everything, and get the fuck out of the way, Nancy Pelosi. They're just saying it. They're not even coding it. Like, who, what are you, Republicans? Like, at least be
That's
better
the point
at lying.
At the Republican message, when the Republican message has been Nancy Pelosi has been scary. And literally Michael Steele, the guy who used to run the RNC, even tweeted this. He was like, this is a stupid ass thing to do. I was part of the Nancy Pelosi vilifying in the 2000s and like 2010s. The reason we're afraid of her as Republicans is because she's effective as fuck, you morons.
Come on. Like, obviously no one's afraid of Paul Ryan because he can't tie his own fucking shoes. But like, Nancy Pelosi, like, just don't fuck with her. And I just, oh my God, they're just making me want to pull
and
my
I
own hair
point out.
Out.
This Republican message thing leads into another aspect of sexism when it comes to AOC and Nancy Pelosi, based on this climate protest that just happened. A bunch of young activists protested for a Green New Deal outside of Nancy Pelosi's office, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez joined them, right? And this kowtowing to the Republican message is an example. Like, literally, that's what the media and that's what a bunch of Democrats did. A bunch of quote-unquote liberals and progressives and whoever did when they found out that that AOC was protesting, quote-unquote protesting, in front of Nancy Pelosi's office.
Wait, I want to interject here, because I am guilty of that. So before I understood the story fully and I just sort of skimmed and it had first come out, I was annoyed as fuck with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because I was like, this is not how we conduct things. But the thing is I fell for it.
I did
and
too.
I am more informed than the average bear. And I fell for it. I was like, I fell for this media narrative that the Dems are in disarray and that the new freshman class is somehow like fucking this up for everybody. And I know what I'm fucking talking about. I can't even imagine what people who don't know what they're talking about thought of this. I just don't understand why we keep falling for this narrative that we have to pit ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are pitting ourselves against each other. And again, I think you're right on the sexism thing. This goes back to this like idea that women are in constant competition with each other, and that it's very catty, and that, you know, women tear each other down, and they're so mean, and they go behind each other's backs, and they, you know, they secretly hate each other. Like, that has been a pervasive narrative in my life for fucking ever. And it's also not true. It's also fucking false.
As soon as this protest was happening, Pelosi released a statement, right? Being like, I encourage these protesters and what they're advocating for. I encourage Capitol Police to let them continue to protest, because it wasn't a fucking protest. They were advocating for Nancy Pelosi to support a Green New Deal. They were advocating for Democrats to support a Green New Deal. And again, I don't know everything that's in this idea of Green New Deal. I'm sure it's all amazing stuff. But basically what it is that they want more green energy jobs. And Nancy Pelosi was like, fine. I mean, obviously, I'm not in Congress yet, and I'm not going to say I endorse exactly what you want, but I do want a climate select committee. And then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was like, thank you, Leader Pelosi. I would like a climate select committee. We should have that. And so they're reinstating the climate select committee, which was taken down after Republicans took control. And there was a great thread by John Stower, who talks about exactly what you were just saying about this media narrative, as well as a Republican narrative about how once you pit these two women together, AOC and Nancy Pelosi, then you can show that the Democrats are in disarray, which is really not what's happening. It's called advocacy, right? Like, it's supposed to be okay when Seth Moulton gets to fucking challenge Nancy Pelosi from the right, but AOC can't hold a proper advocacy meeting outside the speaker's office and make her...
I think AOC even said it herself. She was like, I protest. It's a scandal. It's Dems in disarray. Hashtag five white dudes protest and it's tactical somehow. And that somehow and just that's, business
that's
is
unacceptable,
normal.
Right? And again, I'm not going to take a position right now on what's in this Green New Deal or whatever, but these people, these young people had a right to tell Nancy Pelosi what they think of her because she is now going to be their leader, which is good. And AOC also has a right to be like, hey, I'm in your caucus. I'm a proud Democrat. I want to tell you, Nancy Pelosi, about green energy jobs. And then Nancy Pelosi did the right thing when she was like, fuck yeah, tell me more. And keep protesting because that's she understands as a tactical, intelligent leader that this movement, 2018 victory, was built on young people and women of color and people of color protesting and marching and then voting their asses off. So she's not going to like shut them down, right? And so if you have any other speaker, they're going to be like, they're going to capitulate to the Republican narrative because it literally was. It was Paul Ryan's speaker, Paul Ryan's spokesperson, Ashley Strong, wrote an email. She said, well, this is unconventional. The incoming speaker is getting protested by one of her freshmen. That's not what was happening, Ashley Strong. Stop trying to pit women.
But that's the beautiful narrative. That's the beautiful elegance of this narrative that they've constructed is that they can slot because it's already a pervasive narrative and this women are catty is a pervasive narrative. They can slot anything they want into that. And I actually just want to take 1 second because I forgot to mention this earlier and I don't want to necessarily go into it any further. But it also really, really bothered me in that tweet that the maybe reporter sent because he called AOC a girl. Doesn't look like a girl who struggles. And I'm sorry. She is no girl. She is a woman. I hate that. I hate when people call me girl. I'm like, do I look like a girl to you? Because I will kick your ass, have time to work out, and then be better at most things than you.
Yeah, and I just want to make clear what AOC said to the protesters and later to the media. So what she said to the activists, right? She said, should Leader Pelosi become the next Speaker of the House, we need to tell her that we've got her back in showing and pursuing the most progressive energy agenda that this country has ever seen. Does that sound like someone who's disrupting party unity? No, it doesn't, media. No, it doesn't, Republicans. Shut your fucking faces. And then she said to the media, one of the things I admire so much about Leader Pelosi is that she comes from a space of activism and organizing. And so I think that she really appreciates civic engagement. What I'm trying to do here is support the folks who are here who are doing that, right? And this is about uplifting the voice and message of the fact that we need a Green New Deal and we need to get to 100% renewables because our lives depend on it. All she's saying is that we are here to back Pelosi up. She said those words. We are here to back Pelosi up when Pelosi ultimately puts forward good climate legislation. So AOC is not trying to divide the fucking party. Nancy Pelosi isn't some centrist shill. None of this is true. Stop buying into this media and Republican narrative that women are out to get each other and Democrats are falling apart, right? Just elect Nancy Pelosi as speaker, put some badass women in leadership positions like Barbara Lee, and get it over with.
Someone that I really respect her opinion. She's very smart. She's very smart. Lawyer and we're friends and she said something very interesting about something that happened a while ago with the whole Maxine Waters thing and Nancy Pelosi's kind of reaction to that and people it was definitely not ideal, right? And it was definitely whatever. And she was like, you know what? Stuff like that isn't just spontaneous. You know, it's not that Pelosi was trying to put Maxine Waters down when she said, you know, Trump needs to be impeached. It's that she worded what she said to have it cut both ways so that Maxine Waters can lead the impeachment movement and the rest of the party gets a little bit of cover in terms of not making everything about Donald Trump. Now, I'm not saying that how Pelosi went about it was good, but I don't think it was this women are catty narrative that they want to slot it into. And I think this is the same thing. This is not, it doesn't fit neatly into this idea that women are somehow at odds or that you can not have differing opinions.
I mean, that's what was so like frustrating about me is that like I totally am I when I'm on Twitter, right, when I'm talking to people who are like to the left of me or whatever, I totally understand them when they're saying that, oh, Nancy Pelosi has been leader for so long and like she doesn't support all the policies they support and she did this to Maxine Waters and all this stuff. Like, I get all of that. But you have to also not be hoodwinked by people who aren't going to be as good as Nancy Pelosi if they win.
Right. And you just have to remember, again, have a little fucking long game here. Just like a teeny
and that's what AOC
bit
has,
of long
right?
game.
AOC
that's
understands, it. First of all, she understands that she is a freshman, but she also understands that she has a really, really powerful voice right now because everyone is fucking really powerful platform
yeah.
because everyone is fucking paying attention to her. Fox News is saying her name left and right. And she's like, how can I build a good movement out of this? How can I elevate the most important voices out of this? People who are advocating for really good climate jobs and stuff like that. And so two things can be true at once. AOC can be a really good progressive voice and Nancy Pelosi can be a really good speaker. Multiple things can be true.
Right. And they can also both be pains in our asses and also be doing good things.
Exactly. Like there are going to be times where I disagree with AOC on trade because I already know I
right.
do. There are times I disagree with Sherrod Brown on trade, right? There are times I definitely
right. There are times I disagree with Nancy Pelosi. It's fine. Everyone calm down. Like, you're not inviting these people over for dinner. You don't have to like them.
This is what I'm saying. Like, nobody – do you know why every single poll says Donald Trump isn't liked, but also half of the country still is like, I would vote for him again? Because they know I don't want to fucking get a beer with him. Like, yeah, there are the races out there who want to get a beer with him. But the rest of the Republicans are like, yeah, I don't want to get a beer with him. I don't want him in my family, but I still want him to be president because they have a little bit of long game. And
they have a little bit of long game.
And so this is what I'm just going to say to Democrats. Like, we had 8 years of Barack Obama where the saying was that, you know, everybody says was very true, that we fall in love and Republicans fall in line, right? And I get it. Yeah. We loved Obama. We really should. And, you know, I get, if you're listening to this, I get it. I love Nancy Pelosi and you don't have to. But I'm going to stop loving Nancy Pelosi, okay? I'm just going to continue to tell you she is an effective fucking leader. Get your shit together. And stop being sexist.
And stop being sexist, for fuck's sake, for 5 fucking minutes. Ugh. Okay, Varsha, last but not least, what are some action items? So something Hellions can do after they listen to the show.
Yeah, so the first thing they should do is they should call their senators and tell them to co-sponsor and support the Senator Harris's and Ron Wyden's bill to stop ICE from arresting people who want to sponsor kids, right? This is a really important bill, and you should call your House reps and your senators to tell them to support it.
And then also, Varsha and I were just talking about this, especially if you were in a district that flipped blue, but even if you weren't, even if it was an incumbent, you know, call their office and maybe congratulate them. Mm-hmm. Politicians get a lot of shit, rightly. They should get a lot of shit. But we had a real blue wave, and I think maybe they get a little love too, at least today.
I agree.
Except Tim Ryan. Fuck Tim Ryan.
Yeah, no.
Don't call his office. All right, Hellions, that is it for us. So next week, we will be doing a quick show on Monday, but then we will be off for Thanksgiving, which I know is very problematic, and I have very complicated feelings about it because I like turkey, but I'm also trying to explain to my child why Thanksgiving sucks. So enjoy your Trump family. I'm just kidding. I feel your pain on that one. But we will see you quickly next week. And in the meantime, raise some hell. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.